Welcome to the Cherryleaf podcast. This episode is a diversion from the normal topics that we look at. In this episode, we'll be looking at presenting at conferences. A few people I know want to get over their fear of presenting, so I thought it would be useful to put together some of the ideas and thoughts that I've had over time on this. My name is Ellis Pratt. I'm a co-owner and director of a company called Cherryleaf, and part of my role is to promote my company. And this involves, in part, going to conferences and speaking about technical communication. For many people, it's scary. When it comes to a list of things that people hate doing, it's often one of the items at the top of the list. However, I do believe that preparation, practice, and attitude can help remedy this, and for most people they can become good presenters and enjoy doing it. In a presentation there are a number of major elements. There's the content, the information you're going to transmit. There's the structure, how you arrange and organise that information, the flow of the information from beginning, middle and end. There's the visuals, how you display any information that's there on slides or on video. And then there's the presenting, the way in which that information is transmitted by you as the presenter. And in this podcast, what we're going to do is focus on the last part, the presenting part. It may be that in other episodes we'll look at what content to provide, how to structure it and visuals, but for this we'll just look at the presenting side of things. You're on stage. You've written your presentation, you've created your slides, it's time to present. And for many people, they get very stressed at this moment. It's a challenge for introverts. They get worried that the attention of the audience will be them, that they become the focus of the attention. And it's also a problem for extroverts as well, where they normally enjoy being with people. Being on a stage, often they feel there's a barrier between them and the people they want to connect with, between them and the audience. So let's start off with attitude. And I've made an assumption that you want to be a good presenter, that you want to do a good job. And I think one of the first things that's important to think about from an attitude perspective is that the audience also wants you to do a good job. Everyone in the audience will want you to succeed. It's unlikely that anyone's sitting there in the audience saying, "I really hope this presentation's terrible." They want you to do well, and in many ways they are forgiving. If there's a slight mistake or hiccup or whatever, most people are prepared to put up with that because of the benefits of the information that's going to be provided. So we need to get into the right attitude for the presentation. And one thing that I do is, if I turn up the day before I'm speaking, is I'll go into the room where I'll be speaking. So I go in there, it's empty. I can see where things are. I know where the water jugs will be. I know where the lectern will be. And if I can, I'll go and stand on the stage and just look out. Look out at the empty chairs and just get a sense of the room, see how big it is. And it's just a room. It's not full of people, it's just a room, and that can help calm the nerves. And another thing with attitude is that most people are comfortable speaking one-on-one with somebody, and they're mostly comfortable talking to two people or three people. And when it comes to presenting to a large audience, if you think about one or two people in the audience, maybe people you know, and just think about you're talking to those two or three people, that can help reduce the amount of worry about the size of the audience that you have. Now, some attitudes of introverts. Introverts, generalising, don't like to be the centre of attention. So when it comes to presenting, one good technique is to deflect the attention away from you, the presenter, and direct it towards the content. So what it's about is it's about the presentation, it's about the content, not you. So for introverts, if you have great content on your slides, that can help. And if you're talking about something that a team has done or that you have done, again, if you can talk about what we did rather than what I did personally, that can also help minimize the sort of feeling that everyone's looking at you. Ideally, what you want is somebody at the end to come back and say, that's a great story, rather than say, that's a great storyteller. Another common issue with attitude and with presentations is by the end of the preparation of the presentation, before you get up on stage and present, is you can feel like you really hate your presentation, that what you've produced just isn't good enough, and feelings of negativity in that way. One thing to do at the beginning is to pick a topic that interests you, something that you wanted to learn about, and present on that. And if you do that, one approach you can take is to say, this is what I've learned so far. Some of this content may interest you like it interests me, and there's more that we together can learn about this topic. Or if it's a case of you putting forward an opinion, an argument, you can say, this is an argument. You may agree with it or disagree with it. If you disagree with it, I'll be interested in your opinion because that can help refine and improve my opinion. And you can also go in with the attitude that I'm giving you, the audience, the big picture. I'm setting the scene for you to go and discover more after the presentation. That this is not complete. This is not everything that you will need to know about this subject, but help give you the map for you to go on and discover more if you want. Or if you're drilling down to detail on one thing, again, you can position it as, well, we're going to look at one piece of the jigsaw. We're going to look at this bit in detail, but there are other aspects, other considerations as well, that again, you can, as the audience, go away and look at after the event. So let's look at the moments before the presentation, before you start to speak. And what I like to do often at the conferences I'm at is there are breaks between the presenters. And what I like to do is get in, get up onto that stage early and be ready. So if there's a 10-minute break or a 20-minute break, as soon as that last speaker, the previous speaker has finished, I'll go up on stage. There's AV involved, get the microphone lapel on, get my laptop connected to the projector, so I know everything is ready and working. Now, it may be that other people come in early as well and are sitting down, waiting for the presentation or checking their emails, doing a little bit of work. What I like to do is have, as my first slide, an interlude slide, something that people can watch, so they're not just looking at a static slide that isn't changing for 10 minutes, or just watching them on the stage. In the 50s and 60s, there used to be breaks between programs on television, and there used to be videos of a windmill, or somebody on a potter's wheel, or a cat playing with some wool. And one of the interlude slides that I use is from one of those, is of a windmill. And the video runs for a few minutes, and then it restarts. Another thing I like to do on having that introductory interlude slide is to have some music on the slide as well. Now, if people are working or checking their emails in that break, having something with a singer or that's very attention grabbing will probably not go down very well. So the music I tend to put onto that first slide is something instrumental. Now, one of the things I do is I rehearse and practice my presentation beforehand. Sometimes I'm mentally going through my presentation in the days and months leading up to the presentation. And often the music that I choose for that slide is the instrumental version of the music that I've been listening to in getting into the right mood or thinking about and rehearsing, thinking through in my mind the presentation that's going to happen. So that was an example from a song from a singer called Martyria. The moments before the presentation, we can feel quite stressed. So there are a number of things we can do to try and reduce the stress levels, some relaxation techniques. One thing they say is if you're nervous, your body can't tell the difference between it being nervous and being excited. So one thing you can say to yourself is, I'm excited. And that can help turn the negative feeling of being nervous into a more positive feeling. What I tend to do is just pay attention to my body. If I find that my tongue has gone to the top of my mouth, the roof of my mouth, then what I do is I try to make sure that it drops to the bottom of my mouth. And you can make what's called a whispered R sound. And by making that R sound, breathing out through your mouth, what that does is it, to make that sound, your tongue has to be on the floor of your mouth. I've heard from other people, there's a gentleman I know called Nick Heap. If he's nervous, one of the things he asks the audience is, do you bite? And generally the audience will come back and say, no, they don't bite. And that helps establish a rapport and helps put him at ease. Somebody else, Graham Jones, the internet psychologist, what he does is he stands by the door of the room and he says hello to everybody that comes through. Again, starts a relationship, establishes a rapport, and I would assume helps calm his nerves as well. If you've got that 10-minute break as people are coming in, you can walk around in the audience, in the crowd, have a chat to anybody that you know beforehand and work in that way. That can work if you're not too focused or too worried about your presentation. So you're there on the stage, you might be behind the lectern. It's the moments before you start, you're getting ready, you're connecting your computer. Now what I like to do is either in the morning or the day before, as I mentioned, check the cable connections work, go up on stage, or early on check that everything connects and works. So there's not a last minute panic to find that they're looking for an HDMI connection and you've only got VGA. So where do you stand? I tend to stand behind the lectern. I'm probably more the introvert than the extrovert. And so I have a little bit of reassurance by being behind the lectern. You can stand by the slides in front on stage. The only difficulty with that is that if you want to see what your slides are on the screen, there's a temptation to look behind or look to the side. So you end up being 90 degrees or 180 degrees to the audience. If there's a monitor in front, then that can make life a bit easier, but you can then tend to be looking down all the time rather than looking up. You can be directly in front of the slides as well, but the problem with that is that you might obscure the slides. They might not be able to see what's on the slides because you're there. Whether you're behind the lectern or whether you're in front on stage will partly depend on, again, if you're an introvert or an extrovert. So on the stage, what I like to do is I like to have water in case I get a dry throat, either a glass of water or a bottle of water. I tend to bring my own in a rucksack as well as the water that's provided, just in case. I tend to have a paper printout of the slides, usually about 10 slides per page on A4 stapled together. And I've scribbled on those slides little notes. So if there's a moment where I want to engage with the audience, ask them something or highlight something on a slide, go and point to something on a slide, then I've written that on the notes so that I don't forget. And I also like to have a clicker for moving backwards and forwards through the slides. Now, that gives me the ability to walk away from the lectern and point to things and be able to transition between slides. It also means I can be a little bit further away from the laptop, so I'm more likely to get a line of sight towards the audience. I'm looking at them rather than looking down at my laptop. And also it means that I have something in my hands. I'm less likely to have my hands in my pocket. I also tend to take my wristwatch off and put it by the screen of the laptop so that I can check that I'm on time, that I'm not too far behind or I'm rushing ahead. so that the timings that I've got are correct. And you can get apps for mobile phones where they will count you down, give you an indication of how you're progressing through a particular presentation. And that can be useful as well. So my approach is to be behind the lectern. And then if there's something I want to highlight, if there's a graph or an aspect of an image, something on the slides, is I'll go and walk to the slides and point up with my hands at certain aspects that I want to highlight. That again can help me avoid me feeling rooted to the spot, stuck in one place. I take my car keys out of my pocket, or I put them into my jacket pocket. So again, I don't put my hands into my trouser pockets and start scrunching them and distracting people that way. And if you chew gum, the best thing to do is double check that you've not got any chewing gum in your mouth. So we start the presentation. I want to connect with the audience. I want to break down that wall, that barrier between them and me. I usually begin by just saying hello, or hello ladies, hello gents. Or if we're all waiting for the clock to get round to the top of the hour, just sort of say, should we begin now? Do you think it's about time? Should we steal a couple of minutes? And during the presentation, I want to engage with the audience. So what I tend to do is ask questions. Hands up how many people have done this, and get a sense of the audience in that way. In my presentations at the beginning, there's an overview slide of what we're going to cover, a slide about me, who I am, so they get a sense of who I am. And often after that, what I'll put up is an about you slide. So that's about me. What about you? How many of you are this particular role? How many of you are from the UK? And partly it's to get an understanding, take the pulse of the audience, but also just to get them involved and to be a bit more of a dialogue than a monologue. And if there's people in the audience I know, or if there's been people that have presented earlier in the day, what I'll try to do is mention them as well. So in this presentation, one of the things we'll do is pick up on something that Caroline said in her presentation, for those of you that were in there. How many of you saw Caroline's presentation? Or say something like, this presentation is about this. Later on, there's a presentation by Joe over there, and Joe's presentation is going to look at this topic in a slightly different angle. And if you feel there's a wall of people looking at you, again, if you just think about two or three people in the audience and just talk to them directly, that can help reduce your stress levels and make your audience more engaging. One of the people that had a big influence on the way that I presented was Lawrence Lessig.
I want to talk to you a little bit about user-generated content. I'm going to tell you three stories on the way to one argument that's going to tell you a little bit about how we open user-generated content up for business. So here's the first story. 1906, this man, John Philip Sousa, traveled to this place, the United States Capitol, to talk about this technology, what he called the, quote, talking machines. Sousa was not a fan of the talking machines. This is what he had to say. These talking machines are going to ruin artistic development of music in this country. When I was a boy, in front of every house in the summer evenings, you would find young people together singing the songs of the day or the old songs. Today, you hear these infernal machines going night and day. We will not have a vocal cord left, Sousa said. The vocal cords will be eliminated by a process of evolution, as was the tale of man when he came from the ape. Now, this is the picture I want you to focus on. This is a picture of culture. We could describe it, using modern computer terminology, as a kind of read-write culture. It's a culture where people participate in the creation and the recreation of their culture. In that sense, it's read-write. Sousa's fear was that we would lose that capacity because of these, quote, infernal machines. They would take it away. And in its place, we'd have the opposite of read-write culture, what we could call read-only culture. culture where creativity was consumed, but the consumer is not a creator. A culture which is top down, owned, where the vocal cords of the millions have been lost.
And I'll put a link in the show notes to a presentation that he did. And his style is to use lots and lots of slides with just one sentence on them. And that is a style that I have copied. Often my slides just have one or two sentences, that's it. And one of the advantages of this is that you don't need to look down so much. You can just glance at the sentence that's on the slide and then talk about that sentence or look out at the audience as you're saying that sentence and be in more connection with them. Part of what I want to do is take the audience's pulse. Ask them questions. How much do they know already? What's familiar for them? And what this means is that it may be that I can adapt the presentation or say, okay, you don't know anything about this. Well, what we'll do is for that aspect, the important stuff will be at the beginning of this presentation. Or if I'm talking about a term in the presentation and I've assumed that everyone knows what it is, by knowing that certain people in the audience aren't familiar with that term, maybe I'll say, well, what that actually is in basic terms is this, that, and the other, to keep them along. Or if the audience is very knowledgeable, it may mean that I skip over certain elements that they know and just move on to more detail. And as part of this, what I don't do is write a script and just read the script out. That way I won't get any engagement with the audience and won't be able to adapt if they want things in a slightly different way from what I intended. So we start presenting, and I generally practice my presentation a number of times before I actually do it live. And as part of that, what I will do is check the length of the presentation, make sure that my presentation isn't going to overrun. I will know at certain points in my slides where I should be at certain times. And so by having my paper printout of it, I can mark that I should be at this slide at 15 minutes or that slide at 20 minutes. And I know if I'm going too fast or if I'm going too slow. I really don't like overrunning my presentation. I prefer to finish early and people to get extra time for a break to chat to people than to overrun. One of the other ways of making sure you keep to your time is to go on the basis of taking questions at the end. By asking questions to the audience, how many people have done this or how many people have done that, you are able to engage with the audience and get a rapport, but keep control of the time that is being spent. Now, one of the really useful things you can do when you're presenting is actually to use the silence, to pause. When there's an important thing that you've talked about, to say it and stop talking. And it can feel like it's an absolute age, that silence. It's not so obvious to, but it feels shorter for the audience and it can have a greater impact. To help me talk at a regular pace, not to go too fast, what I have in my slides are often marker slides or chapter slides. So if there are four parts to my presentation, I'll have a slide that says one. I'll have a slide that says two. So when I get to the second part of my presentation, there's a slide that just says two. And I can put that up and I can say nothing and then move on. And that can help people understand, okay, we're a quarter of the way through the presentation, or we're talking about a different section. And that can give me a moment to just collect my thoughts, pause, and then move on. Or I can put the slide up too, and then say, okay, well, we're now going to look at the second stage of this, which is this topic. And then have a pause, maybe have a drink of water. It's a natural break point to then move on. And one of the great users of silence are storytellers. So let's insert into this a little bit of video from a storyteller I know.
no longer live in a culture where there's the opportunity to hear someone telling stories on a regular basis. Now, most of us get our stories from a book or from an electronic appliance. And something is lost. A story in a book is like a drum in a museum. It needs a human being interacting with it in order for it to really come alive. What takes place is, it's kind of an alchemy. You can prepare a story before you tell it, but something happens in front of an audience. An audience response has an enormous effect on how we tell our stories. They invest the story with its emotion. There's only so far we can go before we need an audience to make it come alive. So when I'm working with children, I actually address them directly and they reply. But when I'm talking to an adult audience, the response is equivalent, except they don't say anything. What I'm getting energy from is the quality of the silence that comes back to me. There are different kinds of silence, and you can very quickly, as a performer, feel a rapt attention from an audience, and that feeds me, that gives me energy, and the stories that I might have known for many years and told many times come alive again in front of an audience.
Practicing. It's important to practice. I practice my presentation a number of times before the conference, and my preference is to practice alone. I will go through the presentation talking to my laptop or talking to the room. First couple of attempts are terrible. They're disjointed, I'm not clear what I want to say, and this often leads to me moving slides around, changing the order so it flows in a more effective way, deleting slides. So I like to do this practice early before I have to submit the slide to the presenter, because ideally the slides that are available to the audience after the event are in the same order, the same slides to the ones that I've presented. So let's look at some of the possible things that can go wrong on stage. And the first thing to look at, let's look at forgetting what to say. You stand up on stage, there's the slide in front of you, a number of bullet points, and you can't remember for the life of you what it is that you wanted to say at this moment in time. Well, there are a number of ways to deal with this. One is to have sentences rather than bullet points, so it's much more obvious what it is that's going to be said. The Lawrence Lessig method of just having lots of slides but with only one sentence on them is a very good way of avoiding that problem. Another way is on your printout is to have notes scribbled around to emphasize the thing that you wanted to say. And another aspect is practice. You go through the slides a number of times so you're more familiar with it. So look at, and let's look at disasters, things, acts of God, things that can go wrong as you're presenting. Well, always preparation is a good thing. Check beforehand that your laptop can connect to the projector. There will be things that can go wrong. I've had reconstruct or replace lecterns moments before I was presenting because the connections, the cables just stopped working. Something that had gone wrong in the hotel. And if things happen like that, light bulbs go bang or the audio cuts out, people won't blame you. You know, these things happen. If you've got a printout of your slides, you've got a backup in some ways that you could actually just walk around and read from the printout. That might be one way of doing it. I tend to have a backup copy of the slides in PDF format or as HTML pages and images so that in emergency, it could be copied to somebody else's machine. In the early days of my career, I heard a story of somebody who was presenting with a carousel, the projector slides, little photographs that were put in a projector and you click the button and the carousel went round. And as they were going on forward onto the stage, they tripped up and all their slides fell onto the floor, completely in a random order. And so what that presenter did and what the audience went with was he would look at the floor, pick up one of the slides, put it up to the light, see what it was, and then talk about it, and then put it into his pocket. And the audience was fine with it. The presentation went down really well. It was, of course, in completely disjointed order, but the audience accepted that the presenter was making the best of a bad job and was still able to present in a good way. And if your audio cuts out, go up to your slides and mime, do big hand movements, shout out as much as possible. People are very forgiving if you adapt. These things happen from now and then. If you ever listen back to your presentations, one of the things that you may well be aware of is that you do lots of ums, lots of ahs. You start many sentences with the word so. How to practice and familiarity with your presentation, feeling comfortable with your presentation to and ah. However, we all do it. I do it a lot. And in many ways, people, again, are forgiving. They'll accept it. Ideally, you won't do those things, but the world. So how can we improve our presentations? Well, there are some great videos on YouTube of some really excellent presenters. And I'll put some links in the show notes. Down the way, the techniques that Steve Jobs used for presenting and the way in which he presented, and they're very insightful. There's Lawrence Lessig and his approach, which I've mentioned before. There's Nancy Duarte, who's got lots of useful content on the content in your slides, the way to structure your presentation, and the attitudes and ways to present the information. There are professional bodies like Toastmasters that can teach you to become a better presenter. It's not something that I've done, but I understand it's very good. There are storytelling gigs around the UK and in other countries where there are professional storytellers and amateur storytellers that will stand on a stage or sit on a stool on a stage and tell a story for maybe an hour. And some of the techniques that they use of repeats and repetition, cycles of three, are very good for presenting at conferences as well. A key way is to practice. The more you present, the better you get. It's good to record your presentations on a digital recorder, and then you're able to go back and listen to it and see how it went. There's a gentleman called Andrew Lighthart who provides coaching for people who want to present better. And he has a number of very short videos on YouTube on techniques and attitudes that you can apply when presenting. And if you are presenting at the TCUK conference, the Technical Communication UK conference, the one run by the ISTC, the Institute for Scientific and Technical Communicators, one of the things they do is they offer free coaching and free mentoring for any presenter that wants it, particularly new presenters. One of the things that conference wants to do is get new presenters at the conference. And so they'll provide free advice and coaching to help people present in a better way. So that's really some thoughts and advice on the presenting side of making a presentation. I hope that's been useful. If you've got any feedback, if you've got any questions, you can email me, ellis@cherryleaf.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter. My Twitter account is Ellis Pratt, ELLISPRATT. The show notes will be on cherryleaf.podbeam.com, And Podbean is Podbean. Cherry Leaf is CHERRYLEAF. And just a mention of the Cherry Leaf blog. We sometimes mention tips and advice about presenting on the Cherry Leaf blog as well. So cherryleaf.com/blog. Thanks for listening.